It's another history podcast, talking about the things we think are cool.
Dancers did that?
My aunt edited it after, you know, we would always say this as kids, and then my aunt came in as the artistic director, and she started after bigger, better, more. She was like, and now we add one more thing. Feet, 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 feet. Because she doesn't want no spaghetti noodles. She doesn't want any floppy feet on stage. And I find that so perfect for us talking about center stage, because Jody Sawyer's like biggest hurdle to overcome in this movie is her feet.
Bad feet. No, yeah. Turn off.
Yeah, says to the soloist at San Francisco Ballet.
Right.
Like, boo. Oh.
Boo. Oh, boo.
Did you ever hear the story of Patricia Delgado and how amazing she is? And she doesn't have the greatest feet.
Margot Fonteyn didn't have great feet.
But you couldn't take your eyes off of Margot.
I love... So, if you couldn't tell, audience, today we're talking about center stage. I also, I love the actor Peter Gallagher so much, and he's so good in this movie.
He just,
eyebrows.
He encapsulates a director so well. Like, I, you know, we'll go into Black Swan, I'm sure, at some point, but the director in Black Swan, I don't feel like did... or the choreographer of the company, like, he just didn't do that role justice, you know, but Peter Gallagher was so, it just felt like he was a real, like, he was the director of that school and the company. Yeah.
It kind of, I mean, in comparing those two movies, it kind of shows, like, what those two movies prioritized. Like, Center Stage actually was interested in, like, showing what a ballet company was like, is like, yep. And like, usually artistic directors are former dancers, because mm-hmm. how else would you be like, get that role if you hadn't had been a dancer? And in Black Swan, it's like, oh, this guy is just a director.
Totally.
They don't like, he's not like, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not talking about Black Swan, Maris. We're talking about center stage, a master.
Yes. I know Maris did a little bit of an introduction, but it feels strange to not do a welcome back to another episode of Dancers Did That? Just for fun.
Welcome.
And today I'm drinking this beer that surprised me. I wasn't expecting this. To be honest, I buy all my beers just by the cover art. I like to walk through the aisles and look for the labels that jump out to me the most. And the one that jumped out to me the most at Chuck's Hop Shop in Central District, Seattle, is this Moonraker Brewing Co. It's like a just a fun little campfire, you know, moment on the label. And I just, as I opened the beer, I saw on the side, nitro dosed, shake this can a few times and pour it upside down into a glass. And I was like, what the fuck did I invest in? And then I see, it's, you know, it's 16 ounces, obviously 8% alcohol by volume. I'm like, this is, what's happening here. But here's the thing, you guys, this is a long tale. It's an imperial s'more stout made with real chocolate, vanilla beans, graham crackers, and milk sugar. And boy, is it fucking dark, heavy, and delicious.
Oh my gosh, wow. That's a dark, dark beer.
It's and fucking it's dark. Yeah, and it's not bitter.
I haven't had a nitro beer in a can other than Guinness.
Oh, Guinness sucks.
Yeah, it does.
How was the nitro beer, though?
Well, Guinness is always on nitro. It was terrible. It was bad.
Oh. Yeah, you're right. You're so right.
I've never had a Guinness on tap.
It's not great on tap. I've had it on tap.
Oh, actually, that's not true. I did have it on tap when we were living in Spain and we went out for St. Patrick's Day.
Well, that's acceptable. You need to have a Guinness on Guinness
Day. And I had to drink Guinness. Duh. Yeah, that's not good. Anyway.
What are you drinking, Maris? What's in that can?
Seltzer water.
Oh my gosh. Seltzer.
Seltzer. It's the Kroger lemon seltzer water. Because I'm trying not to drink on school nights. I'm trying not to drink when I have to work the next day.
Oh, okay.
Which I call school nights.
Okay. Good for you.
Thank you so much. Guess how it went last week? I was like, on Sunday, I was like, cool, I'm not going to drink during the week. And on Monday, I did a great job. And on Monday, I did a great job. And then Tuesday, Brian brought beer home. And I was like, do you want to split a beer?
You're like, half a beer? You know, the rule is just a full can of something or like a full bottle of something, right? So like,
yeah, otherwise it goes bad.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just that it's become such a habit to have at least one beer a day. Like just something that's not, it's like such a treat to have something that's not water.
Yep.
Like the opening of the can is so satisfying. So we're just gonna try to buy more bubble water and not
good for you.
Yeah,
I encourage that. It's probably more budget friendly too.
Well, we get free beer, so
fuck. I literally
not budget friendly because we're paying more for bubble water.
Fair. Well, I went to Chuck's when I bought this beer. I bought another really delicious, not stout, imperial stout, but another delicious beer. And I spent $50 for 2 4-packs.
Oh my gosh. That's, Chuck's is a danger zone.
Totally. It's like unsuspecting, yeah. Like boom.
Yeah. And they label everything very well. The prices are clear. I just pick up the things that I think are cute. Probably what you did. Yeah.
It's so bad. I need a better.
I've done that a couple times there, especially one of my favorite breweries is McKellar Brewing. Mm-hmm. And they, well, now they just shut down their New York City brewery because it was in the new Mets baseball stadium and there was no baseball season. And so they were like, oh, we can't keep this open. Yeah, it's pretty sad. But anyway, a few years ago when we were living over by Chuck's, I found maybe 12-ounce bottles of McKellar. And they do like really funky, a lot of what they do is like sour beer. Mm-hmm. And their labels are so cute. So I like just grabbed each one of the three things they had and I spent like $60 on 12-ounce bottles of beer. And I was like, it was one of those times where you try to save face at the cash register and you're like, cool, I guess I'm doing this right now. Yep.
I know, and both of us have worked in the service industry, so if anyone presents us with a tip option, it's like, I can't be the asshole that doesn't tip.
Oh yeah, no, I always tip so hard.
Yeah, like even in that situation where they just ring you up, they present the tip option. I have no control over my thumb or my pointer finger that hits 20% or higher every time. I have no control.
Also, it's not that person's fault that I grabbed expensive beer.
Right. There's only one person to blame.
It me. She has two thumbs and it me.
And it me.
Okay.
End scene.
That's been Beer Corner.
Beer Corner with Maris and Liz. The pre-show to dancers. Because naturally dancers drink beer.
Yeah. And actually, they drink beer at salsa clubs. And they have fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
They get sweaty and they get cute and sweaty.
Sweet sweat.
Okay, I need to turn on the light.
Okay. Okay, so today we're talking about, wow, drama. Today we're talking about the year 2000 hit movie Center Stage.
It was a blockbuster blowout.
Blockbuster hit. It actually did okay at the box office.
Well, Zoe Saldana is in it, so that's a big name. That was like before she was really big.
Gallagher.
Yeah. We all know you guys listening watch 90210. We know you watched it.
You mean OC.
Okay, strike that, reverse it. We all know you guys watch the OC. We all know
this. We all know how great Mr. Cohen is. Father of Seth Cohen. Patriarch of the Cohens. Okay, anyway. So, year 2000, I had this movie on VHS.
Yep.
I was 10 when this movie came out, and I had it on VHS, and I watched it a whole darn lot.
Yep.
What about you, Liz?
I was 8 when it came out, and same. I didn't see it in theaters, but I was just about the age when you start point work as a kid. So when I started to get on point and all of a sudden people were telling me that I had bad biscuit feet, I all of a sudden watched this movie and saw a girl become a professional dancer. Even if it was a contemporary dancer, she became a professional dancer with bad feet. And all of a sudden when I first started point work and people were telling me I had bad feet, I was like, Jodie Sawyer is my inspiration. So that was, that was great.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I thought so too. I had a dance teacher bring me into her office. We at Minnesota Dance Theater had a couple of Balanchine ballerinas in as a school director, and this American Ballet Academy at Center, we'll get into it, but the school is modeled after not American Ballet Theater, but New York City Ballet. And that's the Balanchine.
American Ballet.
Yes. So the mentality and the thought process behind the schools is like the Balanchine lineage. And so when I saw Jodie Sawyer become kind of a contemporary dancer and have more success and more fun and open up, I was like, this is great. And then to have my dance teacher at the time, who was a Balanchine dancer, say, you know, you'll never make it as a ballet dancer. You could make it as a contemporary dancer, but you're definitely not going to make it as a ballet dancer. Again, it was a Jodie Sawyer moment.
Yeah, I'm really happy that you had this movie as an example. That doesn't sound that sincere because I'm not good at sounding sincere, but I actually truly do mean that. And also, I want to go back in time and slap that woman for saying that to you. You don't say that to people.
The most rude thing that someone has said to me was not that. I thought actually that was a really good way of handling the whole situation, actually, in my eyes. Granted, you know, perspective is everything. But I think the way that the worst thing that happened to me was I was 16. I had just gotten surgery on one of my feet and I couldn't dance. And there was one role that I wanted to learn just because I wanted to do it. Like, it was the most fun thing ever. I had time to spare. I was doing this online schooling. So I wasn't, you know, I didn't have to be in public. Well, actually, I wasn't in that yet. I had just extra time because I wasn't in rehearsals for anything because I was injured. As I was getting back into shape, I was like, can I learn this role in the studio alone on my off time or when people are in rehearsal? And I won't tell you who said it, but someone in this school said, I think you should focus on your placement and losing 10 pounds before learning this role.
Fuck that person. Fuck that person. Right off the planet.
I was 16 years old. Yeah. And like, that's an age where you do not have, like, even as a dancer, I was eating like a pack of nuts a day.
Right.
And maybe like toast in the morning. I wasn't eating a ton, like, I wasn't overweight by any means. I was just an awkward, gangly, like, I haven't fully filled out. Okay, full disclosure, I didn't get boobs until I was 18 years old.
Right.
Usually people develop boobs when they're like 14 or 15. For girls, when you get your period, that's when like you start filling out. But I didn't get boobs because I was so malnourished until I was 18.
Yeah, I was going to say that happens to so many ballet dancers and mm-hmm. also to gymnasts.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like this gross, creepy, it's like part of the culture too to keep women looking like young girls for as long as possible.
And also not being too bulky or strength or muscular. Like having yeah. thick muscles is a bad thing. No one was allowed to go running because it would build up, you know, thick thigh muscles.
Yeah, that's what we were told too. Yeah, it was a couple of my ballet teachers were upset with me when in high school I decided to join cross country.
Whoa.
They were like, no, you shouldn't be doing that. They didn't even, we've talked about this, they didn't even want me to go skiing or snowboarding.
The thing like, with cross country that's wild.
Yeah.
The thing like, that's wild is that cross country is, that's lean muscle. Like people who run cross country are lean motherfuckers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's distance running. It's not, yeah. It's not like I was lifting weights. Like, actually I was because that was part of cross training for cross country was we had like one practice a week was in the weight room, but it wasn't to be a bodybuilder. It was to make sure that, like, we didn't get shin splints and our bodies were balanced.
I have some gripe. I'm so sorry to steer the conversation away from center stage for a second. I have gripe against any person where if you want to change your body, i.e. if you want to start lifting weights, if you want to start getting bulky, if you want to be able to do more with your body, what is it about someone saying, oh, that's going to change your body pretty dramatically when talking about weightlifting? What is negative about that? Like, I remember even in college, and this was 5, 6, 7 years ago now, that which feels very recent still, where professors of mine, if I was considering working at a specific company in LA called Diavolo, which has a ton of acrobatics, you're hanging from things, you're lifting other people, you're throwing people in the air, that takes a ton of muscle, right? So if you wanted to dance for them, of course you want to be able to support that kind of work. So you want to be able to do some cross training and feel supported in that cross training effort. But anyone that was like, I want to dance for Diavolo, like I had professors up the wazoo go, okay, wait, think about this for a second. This is going to change your body dramatically. Like, why is that a negative thing?
If you're,
if you want,
I think I totally agree. You should be able to change, like, it just sparks the like age old conversation about women being in control of their bodies and people having problems with it.
Yeah.
Like, so that's like, also even like going on like hormonal birth control. So many people, like the first thing people say is like, that's going to change your body. Like, no shit. You know what also will change my body? Having a baby.
Pregnancy.
So.
That's okay. Right. Because men are more, they're like built for that kind of work, but we are not anyway. So it is a matter of like, you don't want to be frail. You don't want to be the one that's like tossed from here to there.
Yeah.
Oh man, I hate that. That makes me want to like get swole even more. Like, let me go lift weights now. Oh, I'm gonna get swole. I'm gonna beat their motherfucking ass.
Yeah. Also, yeah, what's wrong with just a lady being strong and knowing how to lift stuff? That's cool.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, great. Now that we're
back to center stage.
Let's talk about female empowerment a little bit more inside of this movie, because there is a lot to unpack inside of female empowerment. So let's start from the very beginning. That's a very good place to start. Let's talk about some major themes we've noticed inside of Center Stage.
Okay.
So one of them we can talk about is female empowerment.
Yes.
Kind of. But what would you say? What would you say are other themes?
Things that keep coming up are like lots of things about bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk more about that. But something I noticed in taking notes is that there's only like negative representation of bodies. There's no healthy representation of like a healthy dancer who is like excited and strong in her body.
Interesting. The one dancer that we see who starts having a moment of like, they want me to change my body and there's no way that I can meet those expectations.
Yeah.
She leaves.
Yeah.
She leaves feeling defeated, but also empowered.
I don't know that she feels empowered.
That's fair.
She just like had to give up. Like they told her to, the character's name is Emily, and they like, she is eating in every single scene that she's in, and people keep telling her that she's too fat, which this woman is not, she's not fat. And also if she was, it would be okay. It would be great. But the way that they say it is like, oh, Emily, you should see a nutritionist. And then at the end, her mom, like when she's leaving, her mom says, you're not fat, you're beautiful, which is also not really like, it's not really relevant. It's a way of saying you are fat and that's bad. It's still and fat. Also
it also means that the characters didn't learn anything from it, right? Because they didn't actually change. Like that character was not pivotal to anyone except to see how brutal of a career, of an industry that they were in.
Right. So that's why I say that she wasn't empowered. She was crying and that's sad right. that she was being forced to not dance anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's, yeah. I keep thinking too, and I've been thinking about this a lot, especially as we're all like in a moment of forced reflection. And after the episode we've recorded with Emma, where like it's one thing to intentionally choose to pivot or change or do something for yourself and being forced to do it by someone else. Like there is such a major difference in how you learn or how you engage with yourself in a new scenario based on whether or not it was intentional or whether or not it was assigned. And I think this was a moment that could have been intentional. Like if we wanted it to be positive, then Emily could have intentionally left herself saying, this school doesn't let me take pride in my body. And so I'm moving to a school that will let me take pride in my body.
Right.
But exactly. instead she was assigned, you know, to leave. They gave her the runaround and said, you will do better elsewhere. And she was like, okay, I'm done dancing.
Right. And then the, like on the other end of the spectrum, the character of Maureen is bulimic. Mm-hmm. And I think her story is interesting, where her mom works for the school and her mom is so involved in the company. You see her mom like schmoozing with donors and talking to press and stuff like that. And then like her mom is like a creepy dance mom where she's like asking Maureen all the hot gossip on the students and stuff like that, which is so uncomfortable and so real. Like something.
Well, and character duo is primed for Black Swan.
Oh yeah, that's a Black Swan. Yeah.
That duo.
Yeah. And also like when she tells her mom that she is bulimic and she's also like one of the star pupils. Mm-hmm. And then her boyfriend points out, like, hey, this isn't, what you're doing to your body isn't healthy. And she, it's like a realization for her. And so she tells her mom that she is sick and unhappy. And her mom says, she says, like, I throw up half the things I eat. Like, that's not good. And her mom goes, so you're careful with your body. What's wrong with that? And it's like, that is so messed up. Yeah. And so Maureen is empowered. Her decision is an empowered one, where she decides this culture is like, and my mom are telling me that in order to be successful, I have to be unhealthy. And yep. So she quits and decides to go to college instead. And I do think that while it could have been handled, you know, like it's 2000, it's not handled perfectly, but that one is like, oh, this is better for her. I would be more interested in like, in seeing the conversation that the character of Maureen had with like the ballet teacher woman.
Mm.
I would be interested in like what the I need to leave conversation looked like from the inside.
I don't know if she even had the conversation. I think she just gave the role and walked out.
Yeah, that's true. It's all, yeah. Surprise. Yeah.
Which also, like, it's also a moment to look at kind of a white savior attitude that Maureen had. You know, like, here's this beautiful Zoe Saldana. She's a black ballerina. She fits into this, like, stereotype of, you know, a black woman from a different part of town in New York. And, like, that was handled in a, you know.
It was not handled well.
I think
portrayed her as, like, the angry black woman who basically doesn't fit in because she's black. And somehow, like, she shows up to the first day of ballet class chewing gum with her hair in her face. And it's like, no, this woman has decided to take a scholarship for a professional ballet school. She would know, and she would have advance notice of the dress code and things like that. Like, that was a very, it was a character choice, and it was obviously a character choice based on race.
Yep. And I also think, like, if anyone else was playing that character, it wouldn't hold up. And, like, I think we're able to analyze this because we are, like, we're exposed to so many ways to think about decolonizing and, like, what does it look like to see habits and how do we understand the motivations of the habits and, like, where are they coming from? And I think Zoe Saldana is such a great actress that it seems like a personality thing and not, like, a race thing, at that point.
Yeah. I think that I agree with you that Zoe Saldana as an actress handled that very well. And they do, yeah. And then there's that part where she doesn't get a part she's part of the core at the student concert where people get jobs. And she says, like, it really sucks, like, whatever, it sucks, I don't care. And then another character, Eric, says, it really is hard, right? Like, it really sucks not to care. And then that moment was really nice where, like, it's easy to just, like, brush it off, like, whatever, I didn't want it anyway, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, that just means that you wanted it more.
Yeah. I really, actually, the more that you talk about it, that, I think that was a very tender moment that we don't, like, that was a treatment between two black characters in a, like, in a 2000s rom, it felt like a rom-com, right? Like a, maybe not a rom-com, but like a drama romance kind of genre film. But the two of them were such great characters for each other. And that was such a tender, beautiful moment. Interesting that I think they did super well.
They did. It made me tear up today. I'm just a little emo baby, but
little Melissa lying on the couch going, yeah, it sucks not to care.
Not to care.
I don't care.
I feel like that is also, it's a moment that anyone who has been disappointed with their casting has felt. And yep. It's always like, oh, I didn't get the part I want because I'm not good enough. And in ballet, usually that is actually the case.
Yeah, and ballet is so weird because, and they point this out in this movie quite a bit, like part of it, you have no control over. Part of it is your size. And in the ballet world, sometimes it is your skin color. And sometimes it is your, you know, it's the length of your arms. Yeah, sometimes it's something so out of your control that it is more disappointing to be rejected because it's not like, oh, I can get better. I can change. I can move. I can do this. Like, oh, I didn't hit hard enough. That means I know exactly how to practice.
Yeah.
Like and in also- ballet, you don't get something. Like, I remember I'm almost 6 feet tall. So, which for ballerinas, I've heard recently that people think ballerinas are tall. Well, ballerinas are tall when their partners can be taller.
Right. And ballerinas look tall when they're on the stage because mm-hmm. of their partner and also because of the body types that are chosen to be.
And when they're on point, that's an extra, 4 or 5 inches of height on you?
Yeah.
So even as a six foot tall person, like on point, I'm probably 6'3" or 6'4", which means my partner needs to be at least 6'4" to be a good match for me. So that means that I can't join a company, I can't join a school if the men are not at that height. So that's not something I can be like, oh, let me just work on that and then I'll be ready next year.
Right.
That takes me out of the running completely. And as a woman, to know that my worth as a woman in total, just as a woman in the room, my worth is determined by what men are there.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about my body also being out of my control, but I can't control the men that are in the room either.
Right.
That's bullshit.
Yeah.
So
also, the process by which things are cast is opaque. Like, you don't get, even like within your own company when you're auditioning for parts, in my experience, you don't get feedback after mm-hmm. your audition. You don't get like things to work on for next time that you can control. And so it does really seem like, oh, it's just me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like, you know, ballet companies intentionally do that too, because they want you to be on edge. They want you to always be striving for something better or more. They want you to show up. You know, if you're not cast for this thing, if they see you in the studio, in the back of the room, rehearsing with the people who are casted, you're going to be thought about differently. They're going to be like, oh, Maris really showed up for this role. Yes, yeah. You are now the understudy. So if the person who's casted is hurt, this is like pretty alcoholic. If the fourth alternative,
yeah,
then Maris, you can go in.
Triple backup, okay? Which means 5 people have to fall down the stairs for you to go.
Don't do it, Tanya Harding, Maris. You'll get your shot.
I won't. I'll do a showgirls. Fun fact about this movie is that the main characters were mostly dancers. So Amanda Scholl, who plays Jody at the time, was, I think she was either core or apprentice at San Francisco Ballet.
Yep.
And then Charlie is played by Sasha Radetsky.
The so most cute. Beautiful man.
So cute. And now I think he just retired from American Ballet Theater. Cooper Neal.
principal. He was a principal.
Yeah, he got to principal. I think at the time of the movie, everyone who they cast as dancers were either core or apprentices, which is what Wikipedia said. Then who else? Zoe Saldana was not a dancer, but she had ballet training, and her dance double was Aisha Ash, who danced for New York City Ballet, and she now is like one of the first Black teacher, like faculty members at the School of American Ballet, which is pretty cool. Who else? All the extras. Oh, Julie Kent Julie Kent and Ethan Stiefel, who are Cooper Nielsen and what's her name in the movie? Kathleen.
Oh, Kathleen Donahue.
Kathleen Donahue, the like two principal dancers. They were both principals at ABT. Julie Kent is now the artistic director of Washington Ballet in DC. And also extras in the movie include Gillian Murphy, who was the principal at ABT, and she and Ethan Stiefel are married. And they're so funny. They live in the country and have a baby, and Ethan Stiefel has like this handlebar mustache now. He just looks like Buffalo Bill.
Yep. Classic.
So cute. And also Stella Abrera, who just retired from ABT this year. She was a principal, and she and Sasha Radetzky are married.
And they're
so cute. Also, I was looking for Gillian Murphy and Stella Abrera in the movie after, and I didn't see Gillian Murphy, but Stella Abrera at the very end, when they're like showing all the clips of like where they are now, Stella Abrera is standing right in front of Sasha Radetzky in the class at the company.
Well, I remember there is a scene when Jody gets backstage to watch a performance of Ethan Stiefel's character, and there are two girls who are in the Stars and Stripes who like step in front of her and get ready. Stella is one of them.
Oh, that is her. I didn't recognize her. It's so much stage makeup.
Yeah, it's wild.
Also something that made me really love this movie is how it shows like classic ballet. Like it has that clip from Swan Lake. It has a clip from like a classic Romeo and Juliet that ABT performed for years. And then the performance that Jodie Sawyer gets backstage and in the wings somehow, which no one would let her stand there.
No, fully in
the way of the dancers going on and off stage. But anyway, it's George Balanchine's Stars and Stripes.
Yep.
And they just like let these professional dancers do this rep. And I thought that like it was cool as a kid watching, like it was a major part of my ballet education was this movie. And then watching today, I was like, oh, that is so cool.
Yeah, totally. I as we were talking, I also remembered where Gillian Murphy shows up. And it's great. So you know the scene. So it's after she watches Ethan Stiefel from backstage, and she's waiting for him at the stage door to come out.
He comes
out with a girl like under his arm, and that's Gillian Murphy. I remember watching that after knowing that they were together, and I was like, oh, wait, Easter egg.
That's so cute. Okay, I'm gonna have to watch again after we talk.
Classic for the 115th time.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's so good. Oh, also I learned from Wikipedia today that Jonathan's ballet at the end, it was choreographed by Christopher Wheeldon.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, wait, what? That's so cool.
After watching Polyphania and then seeing some of the moves and the circle where she like comes up and it's like da, 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 after watching Polyphania, I was like, oh, that's Christopher Wheeldon. Christopher Wheeldon.
Yeah.
It's so cute. I love it. Yeah.
And then everything else in the movie is choreographed by a woman named Susan Stroman, who mm-hmm. is a Broadway choreographer.
There's a classic scene where Jodie Sawyer takes a class at what would be like Broadway Dance Center. And yeah. I fucking love that dance so much.
I love that jazz class. It's so sexy and so many oh bandanas. And it's so
people were like kissing each other on the lips.
Yeah. Kissing each other on the lips. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. And like smoking, they're like smoking in the hallway after class.
Yeah, this was the 2000s. This was back when this was back when Perkins had a smoking room. Perkins. Do you want smoking or non-smoking?
How about I go to a different restaurant? Because when you have a smoking section, your whole restaurant is smoking.
I remember when they took out the smoking sections inside, like you were no longer allowed to smoke inside. I remember going back to that Perkins and sitting in the smoking room. And I was like, how is this? Did they just like one day let us in?
That was yes. No. And the ceilings of places that allowed smoking would just be black.
Yes.
Oh gosh. I don't know.
Back in the day. What a time to be smoking. Also, can we talk too? Okay, I watched Miss Congeniality the other day, and there is a scene where Sandra Bullock takes all the girls out for pizza and beers, and they get shots, and they drink and have fun. And there was a scene in Center Stage where Maureen goes and gets pizza and beer and goes bowling with all her friends. And I keep thinking, like, in movies like those, pizza and beer is considered carby and bad. And mm-hmm. like for normal people. And I think that's so interesting, only from someone who fucking loves pizza and beer and like still goes in the studio. And I would eat pizza and I would drink beer before, even when I was a professional dancer. And I thought that, I just think that's so funny that I'm like, am I doing something wrong? Because these two movies make it seem like it's such a wrong, like never have pizza and beer.
I know. It's so, it just speaks so much to our like health and wellness, quote unquote, mm-hmm. like what we think is good. Like even just calling certain foods good versus bad, or like in the movie when Emily takes a fruit tart and Maureen yep. goes, practically all fat. I'm like, that's not even true. There's fruit. There's like, if I grabbed something and someone said to me it's practically all fat, I would throw it in their face.
There's fruit.
There's fruit. And other. I don't know. It's just like, it's such a thing. And it's a thing in my life too, because I'm just a small person. Mm-hmm. I like danced all through my life and ran. Like I had a fast metabolism for a mm-hmm. long time. It's slowing down now because all I do is sit at my computer all day. I had so many experiences, especially as a teenager and like early 20s, where I would be eating a cheeseburger or I would be eating something that's quote unhealthy. And yeah. someone would say like, what do you like, how can you eat that and like stay so skinny? And I'm like, how about you mind your own fucking business? Like, don't, I just would like to tell everybody that what people eat and how they take care of their bodies is none of your business.
Hell yeah. And
also, there's so many times where it's like, There could be something up with me. Like I could have a disease that you don't know about that keeps me skinny, like quote skinny. Right. Like I could be really sick and you not know about it, but you're praising me because I'm skinny. And it's really, really messed up.
I have just started, and I keep bringing this back because I think it's something we don't talk about enough as dancers and as women too. I'm sure this is like, you know, I listen to Call Her Daddy. I listen to so many podcasts that, you know, where people talk about like sex is not necessarily an untouchable subject. Like, talk about it and normalize it so that we don't put such a branded taboo on it. And then we don't treat it like this, like, precious thing that, you know, we can't touch or unpack or uncover why we, you know, why we do things, why we like things a certain way. And I think our bodies are the root of that taboo. We do not talk about and think about our bodies as being good enough, as feeding ourselves, as being comfortable with ourselves. That's the root of where all of these hyper-sexualized versions of ourselves and all of these, like, hyper-idealized versions of who we wish we could be, and all of the, like, the Photoshops of the of all of the models that are already beautiful. Like, only now I'm starting to see things on, right, like, people on Instagram, I'm starting to see two photos, like, one where they're sucking in and the ankle, like, look, makes them look perfect, and then where they relax and you can see, like, their stomach let go a little bit, a little cellulite on their butt. And, like, I think we don't let ourselves accept ourselves.
Yeah.
Because we think that we can be better, but the better isn't positive. It's unattainable. It's not actually us. Like, the better is the Photoshop, or the better is the Facetuned, or the better is the model that, right, doesn't eat anything and can fit into a size 2 at 6'4". Like, to me, we've idealized, this has become, you know, it's like everything that happens nowadays, where, like, where 10 years ago, or maybe even 20 years ago, you know, differences were like this. You could still kind of find common ground. But now we've gotten to a place where our differences are like this, where, yeah, we just are so polarized that we can't find a medium ground, which also means that our versions of what we want are now miles away from where we actually are. There's no common ground anymore. And yeah, we just gotta, like, fucking strip just it.
Hug yourself.
Cut it all. Cut those strings. Yeah, hug yourself. Look in the mirror and actually like what you see and think, like, this is who I am. This is where I am right now. Mm-hmm. And what I can do, sure, like, what you can do to be better, absolutely strive to be, you know, the best version of you, but don't strive to be better for the sake of being better. Like, strive for something that actually matters.
Yeah, I think, and it goes back to what you were saying before about, like, what's wrong with my body changing? Your body is, like, constantly in flux. My personal body is in flux from day to day. It's different every single day. It, like, looks the same for the most part, but there are, like, differences every single day. And so to say, like, one day is, like, a good, quote, good day, and another day is a, quote, bad day is relative, and it's also made up.
Yep.
So yep. I think that it's okay to be self-critical. I think that it's natural. And I also think that, like, radical self-acceptance is kind of a strange idea, because it kind of means that you might be ignoring when something could actually be wrong. Mm-hmm. But I think what we should value is people having strong, healthy bodies, and, like, letting other people live their lives in their own bodies.
Yeah, agreed.
Because, like, when you start to compare and make it a competition and, like, compare what you're eating versus what someone else is eating, all of that kind of stuff leads to disordered eating, and, yep, like, it can only cause harm, I think. So,
and it shows, like, it shows in Center Stage so clearly. Like, yeah, our main character can only find and accept herself when she finds that she doesn't want to be waving a rose in the back of a, you know, corps de ballet. She wants to be doing things that she actually cares about and has fun doing. Yeah. Which is not in the company that she thought she wanted to be in.
Right. I do think it's funny. So in the movie, Jody is like totally enamored with this ballet star, Cooper Nielsen. And he's like a bad boy. And he has a motorcycle. And
bad boy.
Leather jacket. And he's a bad boy.
And he has one of those moments where he takes off his helmet.
Oh, yeah. He flips his hair. and so, long story short, they have sex with each other. She's, like, 18, I think. And he, you know, like he's, like, a really big creep. He just has sex with her once and then casts her in his ballet and then is, like, really mean to her in rehearsal when she's upset. Yeah. That he just had a one-night stand and didn't, and then ghosted her because he a fuck boy. Right. And then in rehearsal, he's super mean to her. He says, mm-hmm. I don't give a shit what you want. You're going to do what I tell you to do. And then at the end of the movie, she decides to work with him at his company.
That's true, yeah.
And, like, great. She want, like, I hope that she... Like, I hope that after the movie, Jody Sawyer, like, figured out herself a little bit more. And I hope that she got what she needed out of dancing for Cooper Nielsen's company. And I hope that she, within a year, moved on to something else. Because I think that was a healthy place for her to be.
I think you bring up such a great point. And I also want to say that as an industry, I was talking about this today, actually, for the first time. So I think as a ballerina, and I felt this way when we were talking to Dylan and Elle too, like your identity is tied to your career development.
Mm-hmm.
Like you are not a person who dances, you are a dancer. And I think this is where that decision that Jody Sawyer made, this is where that really shows up. Because for her, she was thinking, I don't want to be in the back of a corps de ballet waving a rose back and forth. I want to be doing work that's interesting to me. And I got to do what I got to do to be on the stage dancing. Because mm-hmm. I am a dancer first. And I think that that decision shows through. Like the reason that she... Yes, wanted to dance for this sexual, you know, man who uses her and slept with an 18-year-old and did all of this, you know, whatever, fuckboy stuff. She was willing to stay in his life because she was thinking about her career. And it makes me then wonder, like, in the Me Too movement, if... Jody Sawyer was a real person. If Ethan Stiefel, if Cooper Nielsen would have been booted from that position because she would have been leading the force and saying this person
is a toxic person.
Is toxic and also uses women.
Yeah. Watching it younger, it was like the way the movie's kind of framed was that, like, Cooper Nielsen was, like, so exciting, and the director, Peter Gallagher, was so boring, and, like, who would, like, and, like, part of the plot is that the, like, prima ballerina of the company was with Cooper Nielsen and then decided to, then they break up, and then she decides to marry the director, Peter Gallagher. And so it's like, oh, she's boring and like whatever, because she married a ballet director who is very tolerant and is very good at choreographing. We never see him mistreat dancers, except for telling that poor Emily that she should leave. But there's never a time where he is inappropriate with dancers. Mm-hmm. And Cooper Nielsen is like, exciting. He wears a bandana. He takes jazz class. He smokes inside. And he's so cool and hip. How could, like, of course she wants to go with him. And it's really gross and toxic.
And her love interest, who is Sasha Radetzky, her love interest is portrayed as being, like, soft and there for her. And the perfect fit for this dance company.
Yeah.
For the boring dance company.
Yeah. And also it kind of like happens again, like the same cycle repeats. Like Cooper is a fuck boy who mistreats women. And so then Jody realizes that Charlie is a nice boy.
Yep.
Who respects women.
Yep.
You gotta go with her. With him, I mean. So with that, there's also a part where the like main ballet teacher woman talks to Zoe Saldana's character, and she's like, it's like it makes sense that you're disappointed that you didn't get that part, and if you have, she basically says, like, if you have that attitude that it should have been yours or shoulda, woulda, coulda, and all this stuff, then basically you're never gonna make it because it's not about the dance anymore. And so that speech was like half, it's like half empowering and half not, because she also says, she says like, oh, there's always gonna be like directors and choreographers who treat dancers like shit. Mm-hmm. So you have to like be solid in yourself, which is good advice, but also it just reinforces toxic culture.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes me think too about the right, like what if shoulda coulda woulda, let's play the shoulda coulda woulda game with her. Like, could she have or would she have encouraged Zoe Saldana's character to actually speak up and say, hey, you're bullshit. And this system in which you are choosing things is bullshit. And here's why. If she would have let that character speak up in that way, do you think that we could have seen a greater shift? Like, what if then Maureen said, okay, I'm done. This is done. And then Peter Gallagher's character would have said, oh, you're actually super powerful. And I see that fire. And I think I made a huge mistake in casting you as a core, because you are fiery and awesome. And I see it in your dancing. And now let me help you use it.
Yeah. I think that would have been interesting. I also think, I mean, it is like at the end, spoiler alert, Maureen, the character who decides to quit, quits, and then she's like the lead part in the Christopher Wheeldon piece. Mm-hmm. And secret surprise, Zoe Saldana's character replaces her as the lead in that piece instead. And it's a surprise to everyone. And she gets a job at the company because she shines in that role so hard. And so hard. She shines so hard. And so I think that's really, like, it's really nice. And then at the end, Peter Gallagher, the director, and the ballet teacher woman, well, when the piece ends, the ballet teacher woman goes, she's amazing. She's incredible. That was amazing. I can't believe, like, that was great. And the director guy was like, oh, wow, yeah. And then so he hires her, and he could have, like, been really mad and mean and not hired her, like, in spite of that. But he saw that she did a good job and hired her because she is a beautiful dancer. And so that is, like, a redeeming part. That, like, okay, she was upset that she didn't get a part, and then she took it. Maureen White saviored her and gave her the part that was hers. and she got a job from it. I think, yeah, I don't know where I was going with.
I think, well, but I think so this movie, all in all, I think treated this industry, the ballet industry, and it treated a lot of sensitive issues very well, but it treated them in ways that made it look unchangeable. Yes. Like eating disorders were unchanged. Like Maureen, she could have gone through some kind of therapy and continued to dance or found a way back into dance, but she didn't. Emily could have found a way into dance again, but didn't. You know, Zoe Saldana's character could have challenged the ways in which people thought about rebellion and thought about fire and thought about Black women dancing. She could have challenged that and she didn't.
Yeah.
Or she tried. I don't know. I mean, maybe that was her goal and like it just didn't. No one was supporting her until Maureen was like, okay, take my thing.
Okay, bye. Yeah. Later days.
And same thing with Jody. Like, I think she was also challenging the notion that you need a perfect body to be a successful ballerina. And I think those notions were challenged, but only, like, Jody ended up in another company. And Zoe Saldana ended up in that position because someone else decided not to take that position. So it makes it seem like there's a finite amount of space for people to take up, which honestly there is not.
Yeah, for women specifically.
Right. Like there's always room in the budget for another fabulous dancer. Like donors will if someone shows up as a beautiful mover, like donors will go, "Yes. Let me shell out $1 million for this person." But I think this movie treated the challenges really well, but it didn't actually challenge the system in which they functioned in. And like, granted, this is a big question, you know, this is a big sweeping statement that I think, like, of course it didn't. It was a movie made by Columbia Pictures and it was released in theaters. Like, it's not meant to challenge the system.
20 years ago, yeah.
Like, it was not meant to do anything other than portray ballet.
Yeah.
And the industry that people don't really know about. So in that regards, I think it was successful.
Yeah. I think back to like comparing this movie and Black Swan, this movie is actually a good representation of how ballet companies work. And I totally agree that what I want from it is to, I don't want just a representation of how it works. I want, it's fiction. I want more.
Yep.
I want, how can we make it better? So maybe like, let's imagine that in the future, Zoe Saldana's character becomes like the first Black woman who's a principal at that ballet company. And like, let's just like, and also, I mean, the two dancers who get hired at two of the dancers who get hired at the ballet company are Zoe Saldana's character and then Eric O. Jones, who is the Black male character who we were talking about before. Yep. So it does show that there are spaces for Black people in ballet, even though they are the only two people of color in the whole movie, besides core dancers. But they are the only two Black people in the movie, including all the other core dancers.
There are a couple, I think there was maybe one or two female ballerinas who are core dancers. Black, but
yeah, there is a Black woman who's in the Cooper Nielsen ballet, but it had me wondering.
Is that Aisha Adams?
It looks like Aisha Ash.
Yeah, or Ash. Yeah,
so,
sorry.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just think, and then Black Swan is just, I don't like that movie. And I don't it's think, just because, I think it, does the op, like it does bad things for ballet, where it makes you think that like every single, like there can't possibly be any positive interactions between directors and dancers.
I mean, that one was a psychological thriller. So in, from my takeaway, we can we'll talk about it later, but my takeaway from that film in like a nutshell was that Natalie Portman's character, that was the only lens we were seeing this movie from, not anyone else's. So I think for her, ballet was the most toxic, the worst environment ever. Everything from her perspective was incredibly negative. And I think that was intentionally done by the director. I can't remember his name, but I think that was intentionally done to be her. It was all a figment of her imagination, essentially. Yes. All of the animosity, all of the body shaming, all, you know, all of the weird competition and the moments between women backstage, like that was all a figment of her imagination in my take. I've seen, I saw that movie twice in theaters and was like, why did I do that? But
only ever seen it once, and it was in theaters, and I was like, I hate this. I finished the movie. I didn't leave. I've never walked out of a movie because you pay good money. But anyway, we can talk.
You pay $7.50 on a Tuesday and $14 on a Saturday.
You get it.
I get it.
Okay, so back to center stage, something that's really important about this movie is how amazing the soundtrack is.
Mandy Moore!
That Mandy Moore song, the Mandy Moore song, I Wanna Be With You, is the only Mandy Moore song that ever made the top 40 charts. And it's because of this movie.
Be with you, only for a night. Be the one who holds you in your arms so tight.
I wanna be.
So, we got Mandy Moore. We have Michael Jackson. They have a Michael Jackson song in there.
Yeah, and then the song at the end, that Jamiroquai song.
They have Jamiroquai. I forgot. Fuck yes. A couple
Jamiroquai songs before the iconic end dance scene to a Jamiroquai song in Napoleon Dynamite, there was an iconic dance scene to a Jamiroquai song at the end of Center Stage.
Which dance. My favorite, okay, this is for the people, maybe I'll do a clip of this on the Instagram.
Yeah, spot. This is
my favorite is when the ladies are all on point and they go.
It's so good.
So that was it.
Me too. Part of watching this movie as a young person in ballet was learning the jazz dance by rewinding and watching it over and over and over, and then learning that very, very end dance by rewinding it and doing it over and over and over when I should have been doing homework.
The fouettes. You just had to practice the fouettes.
On your tail.
Where too, it's at the end of the song too, where they edit it, where it's like, dance, 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 dance. Yeah. And then my dad would always comment too at the very end. He goes, oh, she fell off her foot at the very end.
She did. You can see it.
Yeah.
They tried to hide it, but we know.
We saw it. I almost went like this.
You're touching your brain.
This has so much alcohol in it. Usually 16 ounces of beer doesn't get me this tipsy. But I'm going to finish it.
You're doing a lot of visual clues that the listeners at home can't see. This is an auditory medium.
You know what though? I like to think that I was explaining like the way that dancers and choreographers explain movements. It's a matter of, you know, in the tap episode that we did, where both of us for a good minute just went beep, boop, bop, 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 beep, boop, bop, bop, bop.
Yes.
So imagine that you're in a studio and you're trying to learn the steps. And the one thing, you can't say glissade, jeté, pas de bourrée, double, like they say that in the movie so many times. But what actually gives you a visual of what's happening is if you go, cha, tu pa, fu, wow.
Yeah.
Like that's a
there's a part where the ballet teacher woman, they're doing, what's it called? Oh, they're doing bourrées.
Uh-huh.
She's like, skim the surface of the floor. And she yells, Jody, flutter. I was Jody, like, that, flutter. Has been yelled at me before. Flutter. Like, be like, there's so many times when you're like trying to like you're trying to do something softly and then your ballet teacher go like yells at you
to be light and delicate. That's like, yeah, the moment where the teacher is going to, she's like at Jody and she goes, Jody, use the floor and do it better. Like, come on, Jody, you can do it better. And yeah. And Zoe Saldana's character goes, she heard you.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. I like wish someone had done that for me when I was getting picked on, yep, in class. There's, yep, so many, and obviously I never did that for anyone else who was getting picked on in class.
Well, it's because it's not as like, even, okay, speaking of the moments like should have, could have, would have, like this is a moment to change the industry. Like they addressed some problems but didn't actually go a little bit further, like they could have pushed it a little further, was when Zoe Saldana's character said, Jesus, she heard you.
Yeah,
you don't have to speak to her like that, she heard you. And the, yeah, and the teacher goes, if you don't like how I talk in my classroom, then you can leave.
Yeah.
And Zoe's character left. And I was like, this is a moment where that teacher could have learned, like,
yeah,
everyone but could have learned something.
Through the rest of the movie. From that point on, the ballet teacher lady is nicer through the rest of the movie. Doesn't mean that she really changed anything, but.
That's true.
Yeah. I just, yeah. What was another thing that felt like visceral? I felt it. Oh, the teacher's clapping.
Yep.
Use the, like, use what you have to do.
And burn out.
And there's
use one. Use what you have and turn out.
Yep. And then there's one where after they go to the salsa club, they're hungover in class the next day.
Oh,
and the,
yeah,
teacher goes, you five. I'm like, yeah, oh, God. Yeah. That hurts me.
My favorite, I fucking love that scene because it's a partnering scene. And when you're in a partnering class, it's kind of awkward, right? Because like the boy, you're never really in a class with the boys. And usually, here's the thing, you guys, in a situation like that, it's probably less, but most of the time, the boys that you're interacting with are mostly going to be gay in ballet, but there's, mm-hmm, a small percentage of them who are going to be straight. And I can tell you this with certainty that 100% of straight dudes in ballet are going to be dating ballerinas. So that being said, if there's a straight male dancer in these partnering classes and you're partnered with a straight male dancer in this class, at least in my head, I was like, am I in the 10% where, or am I going to be the woman that like dates this straight man? He's so beautiful.
In class.
Yeah. And the Russian straight male dancer, which by the way, you know, the ratio of which they portrayed these male dancers were two of the three main characters who are male dancers in the school. Two of them are straight. One of them is gay. It's like, no. It would be one is straight, two are gay.
Yeah.
But the Russian boy runs up. He's hungover too, by the way. He runs up and kneels down and goes, I am your slave. And says it out loud.
Because that's the direction that he gave. It was so funny. I am your slave. And then Zoe Saldana says, I would believe it if you weren't looking at your own fucking reflection when you said it. And the teacher goes, hey, language. But yeah, stop looking in the mirror, Sergey.
It's so funny to me because like, as a teacher, if people were talking during the exercise, I would be like, quit it. Also, there's a scene where Ethan Stiefel and Julie Kent's character were talking to each other on stage when they were bowing. And I was like, there's no fucking way they would be doing that.
It was funny though. Like, it was really funny exposition. It was like the only, yeah. It was the part where Jodie Sawyer is waiting in the wings and mm-hmm. she's like heart eyes clapping for him. And Julie Kent says like, you're in big trouble. Like that girl's yeah. a heartbeat away from getting your name tattooed on her ass.
That line is so good.
So good. And yes, it never would happen, but like that's like the only time when the two of them could have like a private conversation.
And was so, on fucking stage so, like, while they were bowing.
Yeah, so like for movie magic, it's hilarious.
So but, true. Yeah,
that happened.
Okay, I'll let it slide. That's a really good there was okay, time. So it makes me okay, you guys. How do you, for folks who are listening, do you feel like you watched this movie with us, or did we just talk about things in a way that's nonsensical and we didn't give you any exposition?
We didn't do a full recap this time, which I think is okay. I feel like we explained the plot of the movie pretty well, personally. Okay.
So here's my recommendation. You know, so listeners, we're not perfect, of course. And one of the things that we do, please, we know we're not perfect. one of the things that we think that would be valuable, I think, and maybe we can say this at the very beginning of this podcast episode, I think you should watch Center Stage. And then I think you should listen to this. Because here's the thing. We care so much about this movie. Like, it is just such a staple that the only way you can really understand its impact is if you watch it and then listen to us gush about how much we love it.
Yeah. And I'll just preface it that this movie has like less than 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, it's not like, quote, a good movie. The acting isn't good. The plot has holes. And like the way they handle things sometimes is a little strange, but that's not why, like, we saw this movie. It's one of those where like it's nostalgia, and also to us who have loved this movie for 2/3 of my life,
that
we're gonna not love this movie. And so I do think it's helpful to have the context of seeing the film. I'll also recommend, there's a podcast called The Bechdel Cast, and it's two hosts, and they talk about movies, and then they ask if it passes the Bechdel test, which the test where two named female characters have to have a conversation that doesn't involve a man. They also do a couple other tests. One is about LGBTQ representation, and one is like other people of color representation. So, and it's very funny, and they do Center Stage, and it's funny listening to two people who are not dancers talk about Center Stage.
Oh yeah, I like, love it.
Parts of it are so. Watch Center Stage and then listen to these two podcasts.
Love it. Okay, so you have homework, and I hope you have fun. It's the holiday season. You might as well. And stay home and enjoy Center Stage with us.
Yep. I love you. Goodbye.